All right, lesson number 12, the kingdom. All right, before we get into lesson number 12, Matt, tell us your joke.
Ken.
Oh, okay. The kingdom. This is the what number era?
Sixth era.
This is the sixth era. What era comes after the kingdom?
Exile.
All right, what era came before the kingdom?
Judges.
All right, let me remind you that the judges did not rule as a monarchy. They were individual judges all over the region. The people of Israel began to realize that they were the only grouping of people in this area that did not have a
king.
They didn't have a king. So they began to ask the prophet Samuel for a
king.
Everyone else has a king. We need a king too. Everyone has a king. We need a king. Was God okay with this idea?
No,
he wasn't. God was not okay. What was God's perspective on this issue? Who is the king?
God.
Yeah, God's the king. I'll be your king. But what did they want instead?
An earthly king.
Yeah, they want an earthly king. We want a king that we can see. Now think about that in terms of God. Think about that in terms of God. One thing that distinguishes Christianity from other pagan religions is that we do not worship what? We don't worship more than one God. That's right. What else don't we worship?
An earthly idol.
We don't worship physical structures. Yeah, there's no idols. No idols at all. We don't have a cross in the church, and every Sunday we go to the cross and we bow before the cross, or we pray to the cross. We don't have a physical being. We don't have an idol. There's nothing physical that we worship. That comes all the way back to the Mosaic Law, right? Thou shalt not construct any
graven image.
No graven images. Nothing. Okay, we don't have Jesus on a cross around our neck. Okay, he's not on the cross anymore, so we don't have Jesus on a cross around our neck. We don't have Buddha. No Buddha that we bow before. Nothing like that. And so now the people want a physical idol, and God says, "No, I'll be your king. I'll be your king." All right, so Matt, read the opening paragraph to our 30 Days of Understanding on page 71. Everyone follow along, please. Page 71.
If you would be free to sail the seven seas, you must make yourself a slave to the compass. By nature, man desires something he cannot have, total freedom. There are certain freedoms we can have, but they have corresponding bondages. And there are certain bondages we can have that afford us corresponding freedoms. For example, you can be free from the toothbrush and in bondage to the cavities. Or you can make yourself a slave to the toothbrush and be free from cavities. You cannot be free from both the toothbrush and the cavities. That kind of freedom, total freedom, does not exist. Throughout life, we are constantly making choices, and those choices we pay certain inescapable consequences. Freedom comes with a price. The kings of Israel wanted total freedom. They wanted freedom to ignore the directives that God had given them on how to rule and wage war. But at the same time, they wanted the freedom to have economic and military prosperity. This was not possible. As a result, the kingdom era was a turbulent time with many ups and downs. When a righteous king ruled, the nation would prosper. When an unrighteous king gained the throne, the nation would falter. The barnacles of unrighteousness began to affix themselves to the Israel ship of state. And before the books of history were completed, the nation of Israel had collapsed and suffered at the hands of warring neighbors.
Go back, Matt, all the way to that opening paragraph about the compass and read that one more time.
If you would be free to sail the seven seas, you must make yourself a slave to the compass. By nature, man desires something he cannot have, total freedom. There are certain freedoms we can have, but they have corresponding bondages.
All right, what do you think of that, class? How true is what he's writing there? How true is what he's writing that you cannot have total freedom?
Yes.
Okay. I cannot be free to eat anything I want without consequences associated with it. There's not total freedom. People say they want total freedom, but they really don't want total freedom. They really don't want total freedom. The thief who goes out at night to steal, only can to come home to find that his house has been broken into. What will he do? He'll call 911 and make a report that his house has been... Now, that's the guy that was out breaking into houses all night long, He comes home to find out that the 32-inch, 42-inch, 56-inch flat-screen television that he had mounted to his wall has been ripped off the wall, and he's angry. Why is he angry?
Because it was stolen from him.
Because his TV's gone. And yet he had no problem doing exactly what he himself is now angry about. I think that the toothbrush illustration is great. Can't have freedom from both, one or the other. And that's what we see in this entire era of the kingdom, one king after another king after another king, is they just don't get it. Alright, they just don't get it. A monarchy, M-O-N-A-R-C-H-Y, monarchy. Undivided rule or absolute sovereignty by a single person. Make sure that you write that definition down because you're going to need to know it. A monarchy, an undivided rule or absolute sovereignty by a single person. Now, quite frankly, there are very few countries in the world where this is still true. There's very few countries, large countries, decent countries, countries with real economies. Yeah, there's small countries where this is happening, but large countries in the world, very few now exist with an undivided rule or an absolute sovereignty by a single person. But in the days of these kings, a guy like Saul, the first king of Israel, could have someone executed, George, and there's nothing to do about it. There's no vote to get him out. There's no Supreme Court to impeach him. There's no Congress to impeach him. He does what he wants. If he wants to have five wives, he has five wives. If he wants to kick a wife out, he kicks the wife out. If he wants to kill someone, he kills someone. And basically, there's no one to hold him accountable. There's basically no one to hold him accountable. If he wants to send his soldiers in and take your firstborn daughter because he's decided that he wants her to live in the palace, he's the king. And see, this is precisely why God told Israel, you don't want a king. What were the consequences of having a king? What are some of the consequences to having a king?
Bad leadership.
All right, bad leadership. Let's get into even more specifics. Way too much power for one person. What else? What will the king have to have in order to be a king? He'll have to have a what?
A king.
A throne. Okay, what goes with a throne? What's the extension of it?
A palace.
A palace. All right, what goes on with the extension of a palace?
Territory,
area. What else? Power. How do I get power as a king? What do I have to have? I have to have a standing what?
Army.
I have to have a standing army. A king without an army is a joke. The very power base of a king is based on the size of his
army.
His military. Where does that military come from?
The people.
The people. It's one of the things that Samuel said. Tell the people they don't want a king. Why? Because a king is going to insist upon having soldiers. Where are those soldiers going to come from? Your sons. Your sons. The same people that are screaming for a king are going to have to give up their sons to be in his army. But not just sons. What else did Samuel say? He won't be content with a wife. Yeah. He's going to want lots of beautiful women in the palace. Lots. Where are they going to come from?
Your daughters.
Your daughters. And not just sons and daughters, he'll also need what?
Money.
Where's that going to come from?
You.
You're going to pay the taxes for that. God says, let me be king. Let me be the king of your life. The Israelites say, no, we want our own king. God says, you don't want a king. You don't want a king. This is not going to work out well. No, we want a king. We insist. Samuel says, they won't stop asking for a king, God. God tells Samuel, give them a king. They're not rejecting you, Samuel. They're rejecting me. Rejecting me. They're not rejecting you, Samuel. You're the intermediate. You're the prophet. They're not rejecting you. Give them a king. And so they get their first king. And who is it?
Saul.
It's Saul. That's right. It's Saul. Saul is a very disobedient king. Saul is a very disobedient king. Who is Saul's son?
Jonathan.
It's Jonathan. That's right. It's Jonathan. Who is? How's the relationship there? Who's Jonathan's best friend?
David.
It's David. So Saul is the first king. Jonathan is the son. They have a relationship. David has a relationship with Jonathan, which gets David into the palace, gets David into the kingdom. Now, why is this important? Why should we be thinking about this? David as a boy getting into the palace, befriending Jonathan, their best friends. What is God doing here? That's right. That's right, George. God has sovereignly created a means whereby David is in the kingdom, in the palace, watching things going on, sees how Saul rules, sees what's going on. God knows in his heart that Saul's not going to be the king forever. God knows that the first king is a wicked king and that he will have to depose Saul and raise up a new king. God knows that that's going to be David. But when they scream for a king, David's not old enough to be the king. He's not ready to be the king. So God gives them Saul until such a time that David is ready to be king. God gives them Saul until such a time that David is ready to be king. Saul okay with David?
No. Well,
at first, okay. Yeah, what was the issue? When did the problems begin to happen?
Saul anointed David.
And I think it's even before then. When does the problems begin to happen? Okay, how does he gain popularity, Ken? He kills Goliath. He does what nobody else has done. See, we think that story is all about some kid thing. It's not at all. It's not a kid story at all. Okay? It's all about faith in God. And Saul's faith is in his own power, and David's faith is in what? God. But more than God's power, God had made a promise to Abraham. What was that promise? What was that promise? What are some of the components of that promise? Stars. As the stars in the sky. Not yet. No, it's not. There's no Jesus specificity yet. That they would have a land. That they would control that land. That they would live in that land. And now, wait a minute. These Philistines are threatening that. These Philistines. What are they threatening?
Their territory.
Their territory. Their independence. The Philistines, George, want to come in and destroy the Israelites and take them slaves. But the Abrahamic promise said that we would live in this land and we would rule in this land. We would not be slaves to people. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Hold on. What are these Philistines even doing here?
They should be dead. But
that's right. In the conquest, what were they supposed to do, Star? What were they supposed to do with all the idolaters?
They were supposed to get rid of them and kill them all.
Right. Did they?
No,
they did not. And so now, years later, 400 years later, that's the period of Judges, 400 years later, there are Moabites, Amalekites, Philistines, there are all kinds of Ikes everywhere. Yeah, it backfires. It causes them tremendous pain. And now they're the minority. The Philistines are raising up and ready to defeat Israel. Saul is shaking in his boots for all practical purposes. David gets the word from his dad, go visit your brothers at the battlefield. Goliath is the one out there screaming to the Israelites, come on out here and fight like a man. There isn't anyone willing to do that. And what is David's, what are his famous words? Who can remember some of his famous words about defiling?
I won't let that man defile my God.
Yeah. And David can't get over the fact that we've got all these Israelites lined up ready for a linear battle here. And this Goliath comes out every day, once a day, twice a day, bellows a booming voice across there. Has anyone not challenged him? So Saul gives him his armor. David okay with that?
No.
Oh man, this is too bulky. This is awkward. Gives him weapons. This is not what I fight with. Where had David been fighting?
In the
wilds. What was he protecting?
Sheep.
Dad's sheep. Now see the parallelism here? Now David steps up as the shepherd, and now what sheep is he going to protect? Yeah, God's sheep. Human sheep. Now let's think about this for a moment. You could throw a rock at me all day long and it wouldn't kill me. So we're not dealing with David throwing a rock. What are we dealing with here? God supernaturally intervening on behalf of David. That's what we're dealing with here. I mean, come on, what is the coincidence? What is the probability that a single rock takes down a human being? Come on, bouncing off the forehead. I mean, all of us have had various injuries and it didn't kill us. So, you got hit in the head. Yeah. Yeah. We still see that, the repercussion. Right. So, right. So this is God. This is all God. Now, once David secures this great victory, what happens to his popularity?
Boom.
Yeah, he's off the chart, man. He is now the Justin Bieber for all practical purposes, man. No? No?
He's the One Direction.
That's not a good... Then who is it? Who? Blake Griffin? I don't even know who that is. See, that's how old I am.
What?
Oh, famous basketball player.
Michael Jordan.
Michael Jordan? Okay.
Yeah, Michael Jordan.
What do the women begin to do with David? Yes. Yes, Matt. They're crazy for him. They're crazy for him. How does Saul react to this? Yeah, jealous beyond measure. Of course. The women begin to sing songs about Saul killing his thousands, and David is what?
10,000.
10,000. David is a warrior. David is a warrior of warriors. David loves to kill. He has no problems killing on God's behalf. He doesn't. He is a warrior. Okay? If there are idolaters, they need to be killed. If there are people threatening God's people, they need to be killed. David is a warrior. Saul is fuming with David and attempts to kill David's life. Is he able?
No.
Why not? Yeah, because of God's sovereign protection. David gets an opportunity to kill Saul. Does he do it?
No.
No. He even cuts off a portion of his outer garment to prove that he had the ability. If I can get in so tight that I can cut the hood off of your sweatshirt, then I know for sure that I could have cut your neck if I wanted to, but I didn't. And he proves his point. Say, hey, David, I, David, respect you, Saul. How does Saul die? Commits suicide. Falls on his own sword.
Well, I thought somebody stabbed him.
Nope. Falls on his own sword. Dies by falling on his own sword in battle. And then David reigns. Write these dates down, please. David reigns from 1008 BC to 970 BC. How many years is that? Let's figure it out.
38.
Yeah, I can. 1008 BC, so 1008 BC to 970 BC. Remember, the dates go backwards now. So how many years did he rule?
38.
He ruled 38 years. 38 years. David, as the king, expands the kingdom. Just expands the kingdom beyond measure. God's blessing is on David's hand.
Did you say it was
30 years? 38. Okay. 38. So you have 1008 BC, and then 8 to get to 1000, and then counting down 30. So 38 years, he rules as king. David is a man after God's own heart. David is a man after God's own heart. David has multiple wives and multiple sons. David has multiple wives and multiple sons. This is not a good idea. Guys, stick with one wife. One. Singular. One, Ken. One.
No.
Okay? No more than that. David is a shepherd. David is a warrior. David is a musician. David is a songwriter. Many of your psalms are written by... David. Many of your psalms are written by David. David expands the kingdom, the size and the scope of the kingdom. David wants to build a temple, a place for God to abide. But what does God tell him? Why can't David do it?
Because he's sinned.
He's too much of a warrior. Too much blood on your hands. So God tells David, you stockpile the resources. So David builds the size of the treasury. David begins to collect all the resources. And then who is the one that will actually build the temple?
Solomon will.
Solomon will actually build the temple. All right, what is David's greatest sin?
Bathsheba.
It's with Bathsheba. That's right. David's greatest sin is with Bathsheba. David is the king. David has all the wives, any wives he wants, any virgin girl he wants, anytime. They're all thrilled to come be on his entourage. David is out there in Jerusalem, the capital city, up on his palace, and Bathsheba is over there, and she is bathing. And quite frankly, she wasn't being as modest as she could have been on the rooftop, bathing on the rooftop. David sees eyes of this incredibly beautiful woman, and he sends word to have her come visit him in the palace. Is this okay?
No,
not at all. Because Bathsheba is married. Bathsheba is married. Who can remember the name of Bathsheba's husband? What mumbling is that?
Start with a Z.
You're on the right track.
So,
I'm not going to tell you. That'll be on your quiz on Monday, or on Wednesday rather. He is a military commander, and in fact, Felix, he is out in battle right now for the king. The king is back in the palace. Where should he have been?
Battlefield.
On the battlefield with his men. But he's not there with his men. He's back in the palace. They're out there slugging it out. Bathsheba's husband, you look it up, find it. He is out there in the battlefield. Bathsheba comes over. They have their one night stand together. And there's no contraceptive in those days. And Bathsheba gets pregnant. Okay? It's not good. Now, how do I cover up this sin? There's no abortion back in those days. So, George, I'm going to bring the husband back. I'm going to try to figure out a way to get them together very quickly to move the timing such that I'm going to try to cover up my sin. This general, this warrior is such a soldier. What does he do?
He refuses to come back.
He does come back because he has to. Initially, he refuses that, but he has to come back. King doesn't come back. So where does he sleep?
Outside.
Sleeps outside the house. He says, if my men aren't with their wives, I can't be with my wife either. That's how loyal he is to his men. If my men aren't with their wives, I can't be with my men. I'll stay outside the house to remove the temptation. David okay with this?
No.
David's furious with this because now the guy will know this is not my child. This is not my child. So what does David do next?
Puts him back outside.
Puts him back in the heat of the battle. He sends a directive to get him in the heat of the battle. What's he want to do?
Kill him.
He wants him killed. What is going on here? David, a man after God's own heart. David, a man that loves the Lord. David, a man that believes in the covenant promises. David, a man that is crazy about God, loves God, fights for God, is building a temple for God, or at least setting the resources together for it. Lust after a woman, conceived in his heart, executes it. Now he's trying to cover his sin. Does this general die?
Yeah.
Yes, he does. He sure does. Bathsheba is now pregnant. David pulls her into the palace. Husband is dead. Nathan the prophet. Who's dead? Samuel. Gone. Nathan's now the new prophet. All right. Nathan. Yep. N-A-T-H-A-N. Nathan. Nathan's the replacement. Nathan's now the new prophet. What is God's judgment upon David for his sin, George?
Death.
with the baby.
Oh,
that,
the baby dies.
Yeah, the baby dies. The baby dies. The sheep gets sick, and it's very apparent. The baby is delivered. The baby is sick. The baby is not healthy. There is no neo intensive care units back in those days. There are no emergency 911, rush him to a baby trauma center, nothing like that. David knows that he's being punished. David knows. David knows this is the consequences of my actions. Right. You can't be free of the toothbrush and free of cavities. One or the other. Yeah, there isn't a single sin that it does not have secondary consequences. David goes into great mourning on behalf of the child, praying, seeking the Lord, fasting, so much so that when the child dies, that everyone in the palace is afraid to tell the king that the child is dead. He realizes that something's happened and they're staying away from him. They're all quiet. David recognizes that God has punished him for his sin. He tried to intervene on behalf of the child. God said, no, I'm not answering that prayer. David gets up, washes, goes about his business, goes back. They ask him about it, and David makes this interesting statement. He said, the baby's not coming again, but I'm going to go to where the baby is. It's an amazing prophetic statement about the future, the potential of what David understood about heaven or the future. David understood, I will not see that baby on this earth, but I'm going to a location where that baby is. So, Bathsheba is now David's wife, and they engage in relationships again, and a new son is born, and that son is
Solomon.
That son is Solomon. All right, right before we close out our lecture, let's write these things down, please. You've got to know the four divisions of the kingdom. So the United Kingdom, the Divided Kingdom. So the United Kingdom, the Divided Kingdom. Then you've got to understand the difference between the Northern Kingdom and the Southern Kingdom. The Northern Kingdom has a capital city of Samaria. The Southern Kingdom has the capital city of Jerusalem. The Northern Kingdom has 10 tribes. The Southern Kingdom has 2 tribes. Northern Kingdom has 10 tribes. They're Israel. The Southern Kingdom has 2 tribes. They are
Benjamin
and Judah. They're called Judah. One last thing. Write this down. The Northern Kingdom lasts 250 years. The Southern Kingdom lasts 400 years. All right, grab your homework on your way out.